And welcome into the Friday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Joseph, how are we doing? What's going on?
We're doing okay. Good to see you. And you never told us, you know, you never told the people about your golf game the other day.
Oh, it sucked.
But it was nice to be out
there. It was nice to be out there. Yeah, it was terrible the other day.
Is that how it usually goes? You start out? Because sometimes if I like haven't played hoops in a long time, the first day back I'll hit everything. And then the second day I can't hit anything.
Yeah, I played like the week before or 2 weeks before and played great.
Okay, so this wasn't your first. Okay.
No, like that was terrible.
So this actually tracks. Yeah.
Yeah. Not very good at all. But that's okay. Sometimes it goes that way. I'm just glad I woke up and came to work today. That's a better start than yesterday.
Got the phone all figured out, huh?
Yeah, the alarm went off this morning. I was like, well, good. That's awesome. That's a good start. Ian Safar, how we doing? What's going on?
Doing great. Thanks. Week one in the books for me.
Week one's in the books.
Not in the books yet. Well, so this show could be a complete bleep
show.
Well,
I made it in. So yeah, I made it in for a week straight. That's a start.
Which is more than some of us could say.
So, yeah, I did have the thought at one point this morning where I was like, I'm kind of glad I'm not starting this in the middle of January.
Oh,
because it's not 0 degrees outside. I don't have to brush off my car at 5 a.m.
Yeah. Let me tell you, there are some mornings in the wintertime at about 4:45 a.m. It's like, whew, this is a tough one. It's a tough one to get up and come in.
Ian, can you send us a Zoom? Thanks. Thanks. Good luck out there. How many times did we leave Keezer out? You know, bad weather. Just Keezer, you got in okay?
Keezer,
good
you good?
You. Okay.
All righty. We'll see you next week. Good stuff.
Pampered.
Yeah, we are pampered. We got a lot to get into on the program today. Speaking of pampered, our favorite pampered guest at 7 o'clock, Jared Stillman, will be on the show with us. So we'll get into the Predators with Stilly. We're less than a week away from the first round of the NFL draft, so we'll get into all that with Stilly coming up at 7 o'clock. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. We got weekend winners coming up at 8:30, so lots to get into on that front today. We got some more college football talk, specifically with the portal and what in the world is Tennessee going to do at quarterback, coming your way later in the program as well. But, Joe, let's begin on the Predators. So the schedule in terms of how they're operating their end-of-season media stuff is now out. The players are talking today. So we'll hear from Stamkos and Forsberg and most of your veteran guys today at around 4 o'clock. So they're going through the process of their end of season exit meetings, physicals, and all that stuff. So that starts today. Andrew Brunette is scheduled to speak today at around 5 o'clock. So it'll be somewhere in that neighborhood, but he's speaking. And then Barry Trotz is speaking next week, which is a little bit different from how they normally operate. Like I think last year it was Trotz and Brunette together.
Yeah. Usually it's the GM and coach together.
Usually it is the GM and the coach together. So this is a little bit different in terms of the way that they're operating there. So does that mean anything in terms of Andrew Brunette's job status? I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see and find out there. But it is a little bit of a different approach, I think, compared to what they normally do.
Yeah, I guess basically you can count on the GM and coach being together unless the GM is considering firing the coach. In which case, they will not have a press conference together. So Barry Trotz can be asked, hey, are you going to fire that dude right next to you?
Yeah.
What do you think?
By the way, it did happen with John Hines. Like Barry Trotz did have a press conference. It was like Poyle, Trotz, and Hines
together.
And
That's right.
And like half of the press conference was like, so, what do you think of John over here? And Barry Trotz, to his credit, was just like, yeah, you know, we'll see. We're going to go through and evaluate.
Don't slip up, John.
Yeah. It was interesting. So, yeah, probably a better approach by the Predators to separate that out a little bit today. So we'll see what happens.
I would think so.
On that front. There was, we've talked about these exit meetings with the players. And we've talked about the process that Barry Trotz is going to go through here in determining whether or not Andrew Brunette keeps his job and is the head coach for the Predators next year. And DVD caught up with Elliot Friedman yesterday for their weekly visit with him. And he kind of went through the process of Andrew Brunette, the decision coming up for Barry Trotz, and maybe what it's been like this year for Brunette and the players to try to navigate through this season. And I thought it was interesting. Here's what Elliot Friedman had to say yesterday on DVD.
I think it was a hard year between the players and the coach. Mm-hmm. Derek, like, you've been around a long time. the players don't have to like the coach, but they have to respect them, and they have to believe that the coach is putting them into position to succeed. I saw it quite a few times this year where a group of players that were frustrated with the coach and a coach that was frustrated with the group of players. The one thing I did see, and it was a while ago, and it was when they came through Toronto, was they were working together to try to find solutions. Like, there were times this year where both the players and the coach looked at the way the team was playing and they said, we have to make adjustments. And they did both work together to try to fix that. So now, I know that was a while ago, but it was happening. I just think that as the season wore on, you could see the frustration from both sides. I mean, you could tell there were nights Brunette was really frustrated at them, and he made that clear. And you could tell there were times the players were really frustrated, and they made that clear. What I believe Trotz thinks, he has to fix some holes on the roster. Mm-hmm. Down the middle, very hard thing to fix. All year long, Trotz was trying to find another center. And he's going to try to do that again this offseason. But there's going to be other teams, like Vancouver, for example, who are also going to be looking for help down the middle. I think that these exit interviews are big. Good GMs, and I think Trotz, you know, even though it wasn't a great year, I think Trotz is a really smart guy. I think he's going to listen to what his players have to say.
So I thought that was pretty interesting from Friedman. Not that it's necessarily anything groundbreaking, but, you know, he talked about it's been a tough year at times between the players and the coach. And he talked about how, like, you know, the players have to believe that you've got solutions and that you're going to be the right person for the job there. So there's a couple things on that front. What did you make of kind of his thoughts between the players and the coach and that dynamic and how things played out this year? And then I'll get your thoughts on something else that stood out to me after that.
Yeah, it's a key point. You know, it's like you can like someone. Again, I'll make the comparison to the Titans. I think Brian Callahan's a very likable person. There was a whole bunch of talk last year about, you know, and it's not the same, but I'm just saying there's a lot of talk about, you know, people can talk openly and it's a different atmosphere. But it's, you know, players, like, you know, everybody's getting paid here. And so even though the coach is technically your boss, it's like, does the boss know what he's doing? Like, is this guy putting us in the best position? So I feel like it's like, it, you know, like these exit interviews and things like that. Like, if I'm Trotz, I don't care as much about the personal stuff, if there's any of that, you know. And again, I think people like Andrew Brunette. It's just like, do you think this guy's good? Do you think, you know, is he maximizing this roster? Is he pushing the right buttons? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah, that's the question. And if he's not, I think you have to make the decision to go ahead and move on if you're Barry Trotz. Like, I'm really interested to – yeah, see is probably not the right word because I don't know how much detail we're going to get out of what people say in exit meetings here. But look, like, I'll be honest with you, I'm interested to talk to Stamkos today. I'm interested to talk to Marchessault today because they're going to be asked a lot about the coach, and I'm interested to see what they say and like what their thoughts on this year are. And that's just from a media standpoint, much less what they say with Barry Trotz, you know, behind closed doors. And when they're asked about it. So that's going to be pretty fascinating to me today to keep an eye on there. The other thing is this that Friedman said that I think really highlights where they're at right now with their roster and in some ways how difficult it may be to bring in some help next year that makes immediate impact. You know, Friedman talked about, you know, Trotz was looking for a centerman all year. Trotz has been looking for a centerman basically since the moment he took the job, right? Like, he has been looking for a game-breaking type of centerman. And, yeah, he's been looking for it in the draft. Like, he's been trying to move up in the top five the last couple of years. He's going to be in the top five this year. So maybe he gets it in the draft organically that way this year. But Trotz has been looking around for a centerman to add to this group for a long time. And he hadn't found one. And that goes to show you how difficult that is to find and acquire in today's NHL. So I have no doubt that he is going to be looking for one this offseason, probably via trade. But what is the likelihood that you're going to be able to find one? That is a very difficult thing to do in the NHL.
I mean, to me, it's the lottery is just gigantic, because if you can get into that top three, then you can, again, like you've said, maybe they still go, you know, they don't go that route. But you then at least you know that you probably know that you are going to have one of those top two centers available to you. And then that's the best way to do it, you know? And, I mean, that's, you know, not that there couldn't be a trade, but just like Elliot Friedman said, it's just like, you know, there's so many teams out there. It's hard. Teams don't want to get rid of their good centers. It's slim pickings, you know? And so, and the way the Preds roster situation is and contract situation is right now, I mean, how much can you really do? I mean, maybe there's a big trade, maybe a big move that we don't foresee. But after this year with some of these guys and their performance and their age, makes it less likely.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The offseason has begun for the Nashville Predators. We'll take your thoughts on what should they do with head coach Andrew Brunette, and how do you fix it this offseason to get back to a spot where you're competitive next year. More on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Talking Predators, the offseason is underway. Going to hear from some of the players today, which could be interesting. Going to hear from Predators head coach Andrew Brunette later today as well, and then Barry Trotz at some point next week. So that day and time has not yet been finalized. So I don't know. I guess maybe some of it depends on just how much thinking is Barry doing this weekend.
This is what I would ask, and I'm sure this is how Barry Trotz is approaching it. But do not have that press conference until you've made your decision. Like Barry Trotz available Wednesday. Yeah, he's still going through. No,
which I'm going
cancel
to
cancel the press conference.
I'm going to be honest with you, may happen. It may go down. Yeah, you know, probably make a decision here in a few weeks.
I mean, you talked about the Hines thing. How long after that presser did the Hines move get made? 2 weeks later?
Probably longer than
or
that.
Or longer than that, right?
Yeah.
But just press conference once a move is – so then we'll know. Press conference called. Andrew Brunette has not been fired. That means Andrew Brunette is coming back as coach.
You would think.
That's how it must be.
We'll see.
Please.
We will see. Austin from Clarksville asking who would be some options for the Predators to trade for this offseason via center. I mean, it's always hard to predict, like, the trade options, because a lot of times those just kind of happen. Yeah, I have had people say, like, Caleb on the text line, God bless him, keeps texting in about Tage Thompson. I understand the idea. I don't think Buffalo is going to do that.
It if you Buffalo. Say his name enough times, it might happen.
Yeah, it is Buffalo, and they are not known to make the best decisions. But I don't think they're going to trade Tage Thompson. You know, Elliot brought up Vancouver in that clip he played in the last segment. They are looking for a centerman. I mean, they lost JT Miller. Brock Besser is not a centerman, but he's about to go. So they're like, their group is being reshuffled here. So they're shuffling the deck of what they've got. I mean, I think they're probably going to have to hold on to Pettersson, because I just don't know how many people are going to trade for that contract right now based on the production that's fallen off a cliff the way that it has.
And all the other crap that happened.
And all the other stuff that went on with him. So, like, it's a pretty radioactive situation with him right now. But, like, a guy like that, I'm not saying him specifically, a guy like that, could you look around the league and look, you know, I say the Predators' exit meetings are interesting. The same thing kind of applies with other teams around the league, right? Like, does somebody at one of their exit meetings walk up to the management group and say, hey, you know, I've really enjoyed my time here, but I'd like to move on? That does happen.
Sure.
In the NHL. So could you get yourself in a situation where you could take advantage of that? But, Joe, frankly, like, that's basically what it takes. It takes either an organization souring on someone, an organization realizing they're not going to be able to pay someone, or trying to get out a year early from a contract situation where the organization is convinced that that player is not re-signing with him. Like, that's basically your options when it comes to trading for a high-level centerman.
How about a little salary retention on Pettersson?
Yeah, maybe. They'd have to retain a lot of salary for me.
By the way, Austin from Clarksville wasn't asking about centers. He was asking about coaches.
Oh, he asked about coaches? Yeah, okay, sorry.
It's okay. We can answer that one too, Austin. We'll answer all your questions, even the ones you don't have.
Well,
Carl, he asked Carl Taylor, which is, again,
I don't,
kind of a, it goes back and forth. Probably not.
We're going to get asked a lot about Carl Taylor, though. Like, I got tweets about him yesterday. There's a lot, always conversations about him when this comes up. I don't think that's a good idea from this standpoint. Like, I think you need a coach that Stamkos, Marchessault, Forsberg, Yossi, like those guys, O'Reilly, that those guys get behind. So whether that's Brunette or whether that's, I don't know, Mike Sullivan, if he gets fired by Pittsburgh, or, you know, who, guys like that that have been around, that have been coaches, that have won, I think that would probably be the way that I would try to go.
Carl Taylor makes sense to me if you're in a rebuild and it's basically Milwaukee South, and it's like he's developed a lot of these guys, and it just totally makes sense. With this team, with this roster and these contracts, I think it needs to be a coach who has some skins on the wall in the NHL.
Well, and I think, to me, if you're moving on from Brunette, that's probably part of your selling point to these players too, right? It's like, all right, I'm going to go get you somebody
who has proven
that they can win, and that has proven that they can play the way or coach the way that you guys feel like you need to play, and that's the way we're going to go. Now, look, I don't think if you're Barry Trotz, you walk into this and you just give all the power to the players. Like, you know, some of this is on them too, right? Like, this ain't just a coaching thing. So some of this is on the players, and, you know, pick your head out of your butt and go play better hockey next year. Like that's got to be part of the conversation here, regardless of who the coach is. But, like, if you get through your exit meetings and you've determined that a coaching change is going to be necessary, I'll put it to you this way. I can't totally rule out that they would go Carl Taylor. I would be very surprised if that's the route they went.
Yeah. You got to get someone who has more achievement in this league than Brunette. And you say this guy knows what he's doing. I mean, it happens all the time in this league. There's a lot of recycling, but also a lot of the recycling works pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, not all of it, but some of these oft-recycled coaches, like, they win at multiple places.
I mean, Torts is out there. You'll get John Tortorella.
Please. So here's a question from Skyler. If the president position were the option of Schaefer, the defenseman, or the third best centerman, who would they take? I don't think that's possible, right? There's no way that's going to be possible. Like, if they're fourth, Schaefer won't be there.
I would be stunned if he's there. Like, look, I've said it. Schaefer's the best player in the draft. Like, I think Schaefer, the defenseman, is the best player in the draft. And I think that's a pretty universal opinion. Like, I don't think that that's – I think most teams would probably have it that way. Now, I do think this is a little bit different than the NFL draft. Like, you're not always taking, like, the absolute best player. Like San Jose, for instance. Let's say the best player was Misa. Like, they graded out Misa, the centerman, as the best player. Well, you could go that route, but you could also say, you know what? We just took a top five guy in Will Smith 2 years ago. We had the number one overall pick last year in Celebrini. Like, we feel pretty good about our future at forward, and like those two guys. We got to get a blue liner, and then you go get Schaefer. So, like, I don't think he's, like, far and away the best player. Like, I don't think it's Schaefer and then a 6 mile gap and everybody else, but I do think he's the best player. So I'd be stunned if the Predators were, like, fourth and he's still there.
Yeah. I mean, the top three is probably going to be the top three, right? Like, those three will go.
Let's say it stays exactly the way it is. My guess is it's going to be some combination of Schaefer, Misa, and Higgins in the top three. And then we'll see, you know, how does Porter Martone fit into that? You know, there's a couple other guys that could fit into the top five discussion there. But I think that will be the way the top three shakes down there. Like, Roger McQueen – he's an interesting guy, but like I think that'll be the way it shakes down there. So I don't think the Predators will be in that situation. Frankly, let's say they were in a situation where, you know, three forwards were off the board, so you had what in your mind was the third best centerman, and then Schaefer was still there. If it was me, I'd probably go Schaefer in that situation. I think Trotz would probably go Schaefer in that situation. I think the fans might be unhappy about that, but that's probably the way I'd go.
Yeah. Again, they need
defensemen too.
And they've been successful at identifying those and developing those.
It's been a while since they've really been successful at that, but they have.
At least the history is that.
Yeah. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Ryan in Mount Juliet. Ryan, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, guys. You're talking about coaches with vets, and I like the idea of Sullivan. I've been saying that, but from what I'm seeing and what I've heard, I don't think Pittsburgh's letting him go.
May not.
But I would say bring back LaViolette, and hopefully he can bring Halsey with him and see what they can do with this veteran roster, seeing they took what was a mix of vets and rooks to a cup in 2016, 2017. And we didn't have that much talent, and now you're giving Housley pretty much a full arsenal on a power play, which was top of the league back when he was our power play coach, and now you can give him better players to play along with that.
Thank you for the call, Ryan. I don't think they're going back to LaViolette.
I mean, I'm here for that, too.
It would be interesting.
But it's probably not going to happen. What's up with Lavi and the Rangers?
I don't know.
There's fire Lavi chance.
I think he might get fired, but that place has also been just a dumpster fire beyond him, just in terms of, in some ways, how the roster was handled. And then you've got the Trouba stuff with how that kind of blew the team apart there. And I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but there's like this sexual assault thing with Panarin now. So
I did not see this.
Yeah, The Athletic came out with I don't think it's going to be like a legal thing moving forward here, but it came out that basically he was in trouble for that and had reached a settlement on that with an employee there. So there's all sorts of bad stuff going on with the New York Rangers. If I had to guess, he probably gets fired, but we'll see. But if he does, then I think beyond just the Predators, which I think you can take the LaViolette stuff out of the Predators discussion. But I think even league-wide, like you look at the way it's gone for LaViolette the last couple of stops here, it's like, Washington, it did not work, and then they moved on from him and, like, basically immediately have gotten a lot better. He won the President's Trophy last year with the Rangers, so that's good, but now they've immediately fallen apart. Now I'm interested to see if he's got another landing spot in him as a head coach.
Yeah, that's a good question. The trend is not good there. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously, I think here it's not. And I understand the idea there of Housley. I don't know how much credit he's very good, assistant coach, but
I don't think that's the way they're going to go.
Yeah.
The Sullivan thing is interesting in Pittsburgh. Like, is Pittsburgh going to move on from him? I mean, look, I think he's a great coach, so they may not. There's been a lot of chatter about that. We'll see. And that's another part of this. Like, is Trotz expecting somebody to, like, shake free that ultimately doesn't? And does that influence the way he views Brunette? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I have no idea, like, his thought on Sullivan. But, like, yeah, is it like, okay, well, if Sullivan's available, got to go try to get him. If not, there's no one that's compelling.
Right. It's an interesting spot that they're in. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take more of your thoughts on the Predators throughout the show. We'll get back into that with Stilly coming up at 7 o'clock here. Want to get into some comments that Charles Robinson had on our show yesterday about Nico Iamaliava and the Tennessee offense, that I do think the second part of that is interesting for Vols fans and others that follow this program closely to consider as they move forward here. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll have Jared Stillman coming up at 7 o'clock. Teron Davenport at 8 o'clock. We're getting into all things Tennessee Titans with him. We had Charles Robinson on for his weekly visit yesterday. If you missed it, check it out. Robbie and Rex Road, Apple, Spotify, thegamenashville.com, wherever you get your podcast. Really good stuff with Charles. Yet again, we're going to get into some more things that Charles had to say on the quarterback front a little bit later in the show. But we brought up the Nico Iamaliava situation with him yesterday, and it led to kind of a more general discussion about Tennessee's offense in the way that that's viewed in the NFL from evaluators. And it was an interesting discussion that Charles brought up. Here's what he had to say yesterday on our program.
From the NFL perspective, I don't think anybody's unhappy to see him get out of the Tennessee offense, because I know evaluators just don't like that offense. They don't like it really for any position almost on the field, even running backs. You know, like, I go through the running back stack this year, obviously a prominent running back that's in this draft. And when you talk to people about him, they're like, there's just so much space that this kid is running through. And it makes it really hard to know, you know, what it's going to look like when he's in a bunched up formation and just doesn't have these running lanes. The wide receivers, it's always like they don't line up on the line of scrimmage enough. Like it's just wonky, or the splits are crazy. You know, the quarterbacks, it's almost like it's difficult to evaluate almost anything they're doing from a schematic and read coverage standpoint. And it's, you know, like when you hear like Hendon Hooker, you see the Lions sign Kyle Allen and they basically see like, hey, Hendon's got to win the backup quarterback job. Like it's a rough go in the NFL right now for Tennessee quarterbacks, which is, it just is what it is.
That was Charles yesterday on the show. So, Joe, obviously, interesting stuff there. You know, NFL evaluators do not love the Tennessee offense as it relates to trying to project these players and what they're going to be in the NFL. So what do you make of that, and do you think that eventually could hurt Tennessee if that's what the thought is from NFL evaluators on their offense?
Yeah, it's a really – we've talked about it before. That's an interesting – I hadn't really thought about that. I don't know if we've really talked much about that from the running back's perspective, but it's true. Look, what it means is it's a good offense, okay? That's the thing. If they hated it and then the offense didn't work, then it's like, yeah, this offense sucks. You should change it.
Yeah.
But they hate it because it works. It takes advantage of some differences in the rules with the splits. And then, look, quarterbacks do have it easier with this offense because the defense can't really disguise coverages the way they can against traditional offenses. And then, like he said, with the running backs, I think Dylan Sampson's great. And I think he's going to be a good player in the NFL. But it is true that, like, the boxes were light, man. Boxes were light. That's how they – and that's why that offense – we always talk about this offense, you know, fast and they throw it around, but it's always been a good running offense, always, because it forces you to lighten your box, forces you to declare a lot of things. And
by the way, I'm here to tell you it will be a good running offense again this year without Dylan Sampson. I know Tennessee fans are like freaking out that he's gone. They're going to run the ball well this year.
Yeah.
They always do.
Yeah, they got, absolutely. I mean, look, look at his first year. Those guys looked like world beaters in that offense, and they were good players, but yeah, it's one of those things. Can it come back to your question? Is can it hurt Tennessee? I mean, maybe like after a certain amount of time, if you continue to not produce an NFL quarterback, and people are talking more and more about it, yeah, I mean, maybe it might hurt you in a quarterback recruitment. I still feel like, you know, if you're Tennessee with everything they have going for them, including what they can pay, and if you're succeeding and you're winning and you can go there and you have a chance to, you know, to play in the college football playoff and all that stuff, you're going to be in pretty good shape. But again, I said a couple of years ago, like they need one of these guys to just end that narrative, because really the only guy who's come out of this offense who's done anything in the NFL was RG3 as a rookie of the year. And then it fell apart for him. And obviously he came in, he was great. He played in this offense. But there just hasn't been anyone since then. I thought Hendon Hooker was going to be that guy. I don't blame the offense if he isn't. I mean, he's been in the league long enough. I mean, you can adjust to these things.
Yep.
But the adjustment period is definitely real. So I do feel like if you've only been in this offense as a college quarterback – and you're now going to come into an NFL offense, I think that there's probably less likelihood you're going to play as a rookie or play well as a rookie.
I got one texter that says, Tennessee's offense is absolute garbage. It does not translate to the NFL at all. We've watched ever since Heupel started that Tennessee had to dismantle his offense. Georgia is the prime example, and every other team has started following suit. You need to stop the run with a light box, and Tennessee can't do a damn thing about it. It's from an unnamed texter.
Yes, if you have NFL players all over the field, absolutely. You know, if you have a decided talent advantage, then there you go. And Georgia's had that. And I give Georgia credit for what they've done. Tennessee has not figured that out. I don't know that I would agree that every other team has started following suit. I just think Tennessee just hasn't. They haven't been as good in the last couple of years in a lot of spots. I think it's more that. I mean, maybe there's some level of quote unquote figuring out. But again, this offense has now been in college football for 20 years.
Look,
or close to it.
I mean, go back and watch the Alabama game. I mean, Nico missed about four throws, so that game
could have been right
broken
there.
Now, granted, go back and watch the Alabama game. Jalen Milroe missed about six throws where that game could have been. I mean, look, if quarterbacks hit throws in that game, it could have been like 51-45. Like, it was crazy how much was available there. But, like, I think some of it has had more to do with execution than anything else. Cam says, too much space and weird splits. Shake my head. Maybe that's what you're supposed to do on offense. Just the typical NFL offense is very basic and most refuse to change. Now, it is a different
second
sentence there.
I can't agree with.
Well, you can't do that in the NFL. Like, you can't line up the way Tennessee lines up in the NFL.
It's against the rules. Yeah, but I agree. Again, it works. It's a good offense. So I'd keep doing it. I'd win and keep doing it. I think it's a huge – well, you know, that's the thing. It's like this would have been a huge year for, like, Nico, the offense, all that stuff at Nico State.
Yeah.
But it is – like, it's important that Tennessee, offensive line and receiver-wise, gets better.
Yeah.
Because receivers in the NFL, too. You know, it's not like Jalen Hyatt has lit the world up in the NFL.
Yep.
They could – you know, Tillman's done a little bit. You know, but they could use some good outcomes there, too.
Yeah, look, they also need, you know, they need a high level. Like, is Mike Matthews is a high level recruit? Can he turn into a high level prospect? Right? Like, they haven't had a ton of receiving talent in that room either. So, that's what, like, Mike from Pennsylvania on the text line says, NFL doesn't love the offense, and I understand. However, Hendon Hooker went in the third round while having a torn ACL. If you look good, you're going to get a chance.
Sure.
Like, I agree with that. You know, maybe there does become a point where NFL evaluators just look at this offense and they say, you know what? I'm not even messing with this guy just because I don't know how this is going to translate to the NFL. But bottom line is, like, usually if you're good enough and the talent's there, they'll work with you on the offense.
Yeah, like, it's not – I mean, it's still football. They're still reading defensive backs. You obviously still have to make throws. You got pass rush coming. I mean, you know, it still mostly translates. So if you're good enough, then you're going to get a chance. The question is to hurt Tennessee would be, does it start to get to be a thing in the recruiting world? Like,
I'm not going there. Yeah,
I think I'm going to pick this more pro style offense that might help me a little more.
Yeah, could be. And then that's where if you're Tennessee, you just say, all right. Go get your quarterback in portal every year. Just come win. Come win over here.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll see. I mean, look, there's
who's that going to be, by the way?
Well, I've got some thoughts on that.
Okay.
Coming next. We'll get into that. Take more of your thoughts on the Tennessee offense discussion that we had yesterday with Charles Robinson, and we will get to that. Who is going to be quarterback for Tennessee when the season opens up next year? Take your thoughts on all that, 615-737-1025. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Sounds take on Charlotte. Pre-game begins at 5:49. First pitch at 6:04, very specific. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball 94.9 The Fan presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Brought to you by First Horizon, big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Row, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. We'll have Jared Stillman with us here in about 10 minutes. We'll get into the Titans, the Predators with Stillies. Looking forward to that. Coming up, taking your thoughts in the meantime on the Tennessee Vols, their offense. And now, Joe, who's going to play quarterback for Tennessee? We're a couple days into the spring portal window officially being open. Tennessee has not found a quarterback as of yet. At least if they have, there's been nothing reported on it as of yet. Some interesting names that have been out there. You know, Notre Dame had a transfer yesterday, Steve Angeli.
That's the one to watch.
And that is an interesting one to watch. Now, in terms of, like, pure experience, he doesn't have a ton. Like, you go back and you look at his numbers. I think in 2023, he threw 44 passes. He completed 34 of them, so that's a good percentage. 504 yards, 7 touchdowns and a pick. And then last year he threw 36 passes, 268 yards, 3 touchdowns. So you're talking about a player that's been a backup quarterback that is now potentially available for Tennessee. We'll see what happens on that front. But that was a name circulating Vol Twitter yesterday that got the folks riled up. Yeah. Nothing on this point as of a landing spot, though, as of yet.
And it's just – it's a – you know, it's an interesting situation. He certainly could be an upgrade over Merklinger. But like you said, he's a backup. He's in there because he lost the job to Cameron Carr, grandson of former Michigan coach Lloyd Carr, who that was a big controversy when he picked Notre Dame in the first place. Now, if you're a Tennessee fan, look at this situation, you hope it means that Cameron Carr is just ridiculously good.
Yeah.
And this guy just hasn't quite gotten a chance. I will say, too, good for Riley Leonard. My goodness, they got all the way to the national title game. But also, even Riley Leonard last year left something to be desired at times, and I'd say maybe like overall. But again, terrific runner, made a lot of plays. He made some big plays, but it's not like they had first-round quarterback play last year.
Yeah, Joe Burrow wasn't in there. Yeah.
Yeah, and this guy. So this could be an upgrade for Tennessee. This could be the best-case scenario. I don't know that I'd be excited about it. You know, if you care about, like, his actual recruiting profile, he was like a three-star, like a composite three-star quarterback. Kind of profiles as backup at the top level and maybe a guy who, you know, is a starter, highly productive, maybe one step lower. But, you know, one thing I really don't know is in terms of, like, skill set, you know, like, is he mobile? I really don't know much about him. In terms of, you haven't had much chance to watch him play.
Yeah, and played a whole lot. I mean, but I think that kind of tells you where things are at right now. Like, unless Tennessee is, you know, having conversations behind the scenes right now with players that we don't know about, which you always have to leave the door open today's day and age. Unless it's something like that, the options that we know that are out there right now, like, none of them I don't think are going to get you overly excited. If you're a Tennessee fan, which leads to the question, Joe, like, do you think that this is leading to Jake Merklinger being the starting quarterback for Tennessee in the fall, or at least like when they're going to end up with some quarterback here just because they need another body in the room. So they're going to have somebody. It's just going to be interesting to see who it is. Should the expectation, if you're a Tennessee fan heading into this process this week, and your expectation was go find a starting quarterback that you know is the guy coming in, should your expectation at this point change to, well, go get somebody that can compete with Jake Merklinger for the starting quarterback job?
I mean, right now, I think your hope is still what you said, which is you guys are negotiating with Avery Johnson, right?
Yeah.
Or whoever, someone who is locked in at a place. Hey, look, think about that. I don't have a problem with this stuff. This is what everybody does. So, like, I do not have a problem with Josh Heupel and his staff doing that. This is what happens. But if you're one of those quarterbacks, you know, you're committed. You've gone through all this stuff. You've been paid. So, you know, it's got to be something probably ridiculous. For a lot of these guys, it's like, look, there is a reality of, actually, I like my teammates, my school, my coaches, et cetera. That does happen. There are people who feel loyalty. I know it's a crazy concept.
It's also almost May. Yeah, there's that too.
Right. And so, like, to pry someone who is kind of locked into something, it's almost like, I guess one beyond money, but one selling point is like, is there a good quarterback? Because, you know, Belichick got the kid from South Alabama. But again, that's bumping up a level. I mean, and he is a very talented guy, but that's bumping up a level. But, like, is there somebody who has doubts about, like, man, we look like we're going to go 5-7 next year, who you could say, look, you put us in the college football playoff, you know? Would you like to play in the college football playoff? I mean, like,
right. It's
got so many different factors to me would have to be there for them to really have a chance to pry one of these really good starters from somebody.
Merkslinger better be putting in some work. Maybe have to play.
He may be. It may be Merkslinger time.
Right.
I think he's talented. I think that, and he's been in the system. I don't buy. We have Stilley coming on next. I've heard him talk about, you know, this first year guy in this offense. I think a veteran quarterback, you know, you might have a little bit of bumps early, but I think over the course of a summer in camp, if you have someone talented enough, they'd be fine. Again, Hendon Hooker, was able to come in and what did you say? 31-3? Was that what he was? TDs and picks his first year, not the Heisman candidate year. Yeah. His first year was 31-3 TDs and picks. That's okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, he had spring practice, but yeah.
Yes. Yes, for sure. And that's a difference.
Here's what I would say. Like, I don't think the Tennessee offense from like a schematic standpoint is very complicated to learn if you're a quarterback. The complicated part is trying to operate the thing at warp speed. That's right. When it becomes complicated and getting everybody on the same page doing that. But like purely coming in and learning the offense, I don't think is really that difficult for Tennessee.
And let's face it, they haven't been going at warp speed.
Exactly.
So I don't know if that's more on Nico. I mean, it went down with Milton. That's something I'd like to look up, actually, the time between plays. But I think it went down even more with Nico, and they had their least productive QB season with Nico.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Stilly will be with us coming up next. We'll get into the Titans less than a week away from the NFL draft, and also the Predators with some big offseason questions and decisions coming up here the next few days and weeks. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 1025-1063, The Game.